By the way, the run credit system that might come up during the comment or during the emerging podcast scene presented by Extend Technologies, 10:15 Eastern on 92.3 The Fan Extra on the free Odyssey app. Lima had an observation game one of the NBA Finals last week that there are no logos again on the floor. And you made a mention. You said it's been years since they've had a logo on the floor, and it takes away from the feeling of the finals. The finals logo used to be on the floor in the script of
Steven and the score bug. Yeah. They're just not doing a good job of making any of this special.
And it's like, hey, man, like, the Super Bowl is different from all the other games. I think the World Series games are different from all the other games. And I think Major League Baseball does do a good job of not just the game. It's like, hey, it's October. Nah, the bunting's back. All the other things that they put on the they spray painted on the field. You are in the ALCS. You are in the World Series. These are different things. Mm-hmm. The NBA doesn't want to do any of that. Like, the only thing that you would notice it's a special game for are a bunch of handed out shirts. That's it. That's it. You were right. You said, why don't they paint it on the court? Well, in game two, they superimposed the logo, the finals logo on the floor. Adam Silver, before game three, commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, was asked about that on ESPN/ABC. Here is the commissioner of the NBA.
I've seen some of the chat on social media around on-court decals. People don't realize they went away a decade ago because there were claims that Kendrick knows. Some of the players were saying it was slippery when we had the decals on the floor. So we're back to adding them virtually. So those are on.
Which people were quick to notice this. What do you call the in-season tournament floor then?
Right. So it's a different floor that has different paint job.
Well,
so it's not a big decal.
But yeah. The decal is something that's added after the fact that's on top. It's like putting a wrap on your car.
Yeah, but so what I don't understand is
the floor is painted and then glossed over.
Right, but why don't they have, because you know, over
a finals floor.
Right. Why don't they have a finals floor or at the very least a portion of the floor, because you've been over there.
Well,
in between the hockey and basketball games, you see how the floor gets installed.
Is in the back, yeah. And they bring it out for special events like Wine and Gold United members go back there and have parties on that 2016 floor.
Okay.
Like a portion of it.
That's
fun.
I believe, you know, they sold some of it off and given it away and auctioned.
They've got part of the center circle out front that is, you know, lined up on the wall. So all I'm saying is these teams are worth enough money. You know, for me and you to just have another basketball part of a court would be ridiculous.
But we have four jerseys already, and there is a different floor for each one of those, plus your in-season tournament floor. Let's go get another floor.
Well, my question is, the floors are built in Ohio. A company in Ohio builds the floors.
Where?
I don't remember where.
Columbus handout?
No.
It's called floors, but it doesn't have a Z.
I think most people in the world don't realize that, like, footballs, everybody in Ohio knows, but footballs are made in Ohio.
Yeah.
The NFL footballs are made in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And that the floors, I do believe, come from a company in Ohio. It's either here or Michigan, but I think it's here. How long does How long does it take to make a special floor? Does it take that long? Because I would say, could you make two floors, but you don't know who's getting the finals?
I think you
can. Can you paint it and send it out that
you
quick?
You should be able to make the interior, not the, you know. Because where it's really going to differ when it's your team, right? When it's Oklahoma City's, they're going to want that blue that is the color of their jersey as their out of bounds area and all that. I think you should be able to change the interior.
Yes, that's my first point. The second thing is, he said it's been 10 years. Okay, well, what have I seen in technology that wasn't there 10 years ago that's there today? They got the Waymos driving around. Well, you know. That's not the best example at this moment, but still, you got self-driving cars out there.
You got a fire extinguisher you can use.
You got self-driving cars out there that weren't around 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I would imagine the good people at 3M or DuPont or wherever could find me a floor logo that you could paint it on that's not going to be very slippery. Third thing is this. I saw a lot of people reacting to Adam Silver. You know, we lived to hate Roger Goodell for a long time. Now, you and I have always kind of felt differently. At least I have. It's like, well, hey, guys, like the owner or the commissioner is there. He's a conduit for the owners. And he's a go-between the players union and the owners and the media rights entities and things like that. They obviously wield a lot of power. But also they're there because they shield the owners from severe criticism. You know, Roger Goodell, part of the reason he makes 50 or 60 whatever million dollars a year is that they don't want to get cussed out. The owners don't. So they'll just go let Roger get cussed out. And I would say the same thing with Manfred and Silver. But there were a lot of people where Adam Silver went from, like, beloved in the NBA and in pro sports to saying he's the worst commissioner in pro sports. For a long time, people were saying Roger was. Then it was Rob Manfred. Has Adam Silver taken over as the worst commissioner of the big three? I know you got your theory. I just want to ask you a question.
Well, I would say yes, based on sports talk radio conversations, he's the worst. But in actuality, the valuations of NBA teams way more than baseball. They've gone up way more than baseball, and they just tripled the TV deal, again, way more than baseball.
True, but so, I'm saying they're all, because if Ken Rosenthal's still making the argument going, it's a $12 billion a year industry, okay, well, Rob Manfred didn't do a bunch of things to stop that from happening, so they would all be good in that case, with the exception of one of my favorite sports, but that's a totally different argument when it comes to that one. But
yeah, so again, there are a ton of things we complain about, and again, you're only getting... You're getting less people now watching the NBA Finals than last year's World Series. Now, last year's World Series, Dodgers, Yankees, those are two of the bigger brands in all of sports. But that is concerning for the NBA. But then as I say that, I remember, they just signed that TV deal last year that baseball would do very, very naughty things to get a deal like that done. And they just would never be able to.
I had to ask it. I think the vast majority of people, Roger Goodell has taken like this turn. It's almost become fun for him to be booed, and it's almost like, you remember when you, like, pro wrestlers, when you were a kid, you hated them. And then as you get older, like, man, I got a lot of good memories with that guy. Ric Flair. He hated Ric Flair when I was a kid, and now it's like, I like that guy. Is it that way with Roger Goodell with America?
It's absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Kurt Angle, everyone chants "You suck," and if you know the song, it's
yep.
And they say it when he came back. It was like a term of endearment for him.
Mm-hmm. It's like you've made it fun.
Roger waits for it now. He puts his hands up and openly wants it.
And the purists, I mean, they may hate Rob Manfred, but at the same time, like, hey man, the pitch clock—it's been a game changer. We had Anthony Castrovince on. Like, there's been some good there. I just had to ask you the question. So, what is your theory about the NBA Finals? I didn't get a chance to get to it earlier. I got to get to it here. Go.
That we keep wondering when are the NBA Finals going to be able to capture that mass audience again? When are they going to be able to get huge ratings again and make these games feel special and big and get the country's attention? And I think part of the problem goes back to the super team era that we were involved with. That how can anything ever look like what was on the floor in 2017? Go back to 2017. It was LeBron on our end, Kyrie, Kevin Love, and a very, very dominant regular season Cavs team that also dominated in the playoffs up until the finals. What did you have at Golden State? Holy cow, you had Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala. That's five Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is ever going to equal that now in the second apron era? Where now it doesn't even make sense. Like, Kevin Durant's going to be available, and people are wondering, does that even make sense? Somebody as talented as Kevin Durant. We have gotten away from the super teams now, which is what everybody wanted. But now the basketball, did anybody know the names of any of the guys on the floor last night that would be outside of SGA and Halliburton? Yeah, maybe Cavs fans, because we just played the Pacers.
Before this playoff run.
Yeah, you would not have known
who Mathurin was.
Smith. Maybe a few years from now, but how's Oklahoma City going to keep their team together? They might already lose Lou Dort. He was phenomenal last night. At one point, he was 5 for 5 from 3-point range, and all of them were huge, and he's a dominant defensive player. They might have to lose him because of the second apron. So our brains, it's going to have to be further away from that era of Miami Heat, the Heatles, right? Then the Cavs and the Warriors, getting further away from those years to recalibrate. Because right now, these teams on the floor, despite analytics, despite what the numbers say, the shooting, these teams don't have 5 Hall of Famers on it as we sit today. It's just not going to be as much talent. You're never going to associate any of these finals teams
you pointed out before the show, it's kind of, for the basketball fans out there, the guys who are basketball first, like, credit where it's due, the guys who listen to us and like the Taylor Tollivers on Twitter, brought to you by Scheibe Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store, right? you said what, 8 million people were watching the finals, then that's a low number, but that's your hardcore basketball fan.
You've got the hardcore.
So you get your delight. And I don't want them to change what they've done. I really don't. I want this to stay as long as they possibly can, because I think we're just at the beginning of this grand experiment when it comes to the second apron, and I don't think that big sweeping change to go back to the way it was is necessarily the best way to do this, because I feel the Cavs, I never thought I'd ever see a Cavs team that was this good ever again. That's why I'm a little bit defensive of them. I never thought we'd have a chance ever again. And if we go back to the old level, I'm going to go back to thinking we don't have a chance ever again. And it's the same way a lot of people think of baseball. I don't want to go back to that. So if I just get used to this, I think that eventually a star will stand out. Maybe it will be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Got to get his team going right now. But maybe there will be a star that doesn't. Somebody's going to have to take the torch. We don't just look at one of the big three sports and professional sports in America and don't make a legendary star out of it. We don't do it. Now, he may not match up to LeBron, MJ, da-da-da-da-da-da, but he may still be in the conversation by the time it's all said and done. Who that is, I don't know yet. I don't know. But I think we do it for everything. Like, you can't have, even I, as a person who's like, all right, I'm going to tune in a little bit of the Stanley Cup final, but you know how we are. We have the monsters here, but we're not breaking down hockey every chance. Got a lot of respect for it, but it ain't what we do. You would say, yeah, I know who Wayne Gretzky is. I know who the great one is. I know who Sid the Kid is. I know who Connor McDavid is. Like, they stick into your head. I don't know if there's a great one on the way right now for the NBA. But if there's success, somebody's bound to take that mantle.
I think they keep all four. You're not cutting a third-round rookie. I don't even think you're cutting Shedeur Sanders. Fifth-round picks don't get cut that often. I think you gave up enough for Kenny Pickett that you want to see that through. Maybe if Flacco is just terrible at training camp, he doesn't make the team. But ultimately, I think they keep four because why not? There's value in that. And I just think that, unfortunately for you guys, I think all four of them are going to start a game this year, at least one. You just look at this Browns schedule, as I know you guys have. Their first six games, they're going 0-6, right? So once you if you do go 1-5, 0-6, well, you're making a change at that point, or if you haven't already, you're probably going from Flacco to Pickett. At some point, Pickett's probably not going to be that great, so you go on to a rookie, and then he's probably going to struggle because he's a mid-round rookie, whoever it is, Shedeur or Dylan, and then you might go to the next guy. So I just think that it's going to be quarterback carousel, and I think the Browns' 2026 quarterback is going to be playing on Saturdays this fall anyway.
That is Frank Schwab of Yahoo talking to the guys on Afternoon Drive, just painting a sunny disposition of what he thinks the 2025 Cleveland Browns are going to look like. I don't know if Mary Kay Cabot agrees with him. She's from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. She has proverbial boots on the ground over there in Berea. Mary Kay, you heard that clip. What are you thinking in that quarterback situation and how the early part of the season is going to play out?
Well, I could see them possibly keeping four quarterbacks for a little while into the season to see if maybe someone might lose a quarterback and try to trade for one of them. So that could possibly happen. And as far as going 0-6, they do have a very, very tough part of the schedule. But I do think that the Nationals are underestimating the Browns roster just a little bit. When I look out there, I do see a little bit more talent than I think some of the Nationals think this Browns team has. And I think that's because of that 3-14 record from last season, which had so much to do with giveaways and quarterback issues. And there will be quarterback issues, of course, again this year. But if they can get clean quarterback play, that's the most important thing. If they can get clean quarterback play where they're not throwing it to the other team all the time, then they should be able to win some games by virtue of the turnover battle.
Okay, the interesting part of this, quote, quarterback competition is that you've got two of the veterans, you've got the two rookies drafted in the same draft a few rounds apart. So we were wondering, are you getting a legitimate competition all the way around, or are you seeing different ways of attempting to evaluate the veterans versus the rookies?
Well, I'm seeing attempts to evaluate these guys differently, not just divided between veterans and rookies, but between guys that I feel like they're really, really getting ready to either start the season or be the backup, and guys that might not be slated for those roles. Now, it can change, but I'm still looking out there and seeing them trying to get Kenny Pickett and Dylan Gabriel really ready. They're taking the brunt of the install. Those are the guys that are out there getting the most difficult work in terms of what's going to stay in the new offense and what's going to go. I don't see Joe getting as many reps. Nobody does, obviously, because he doesn't need as many reps right now. Shador is just starting to work his way up into some more 11-on-11s. So Kenny and Dylan have taken the bulk of the quality reps. They've taken most of the tougher stuff. And that says to me that at this point, they're still trying to get those two guys ready.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That's a very interesting part of it, Mary Kay. When it comes to Dylan Gabriel, I want to know, like, not from the Browns perspective. I know we ask you insider questions all the time. That's why we have you on every week, and we were very appreciative of your time, and you know that. But I kind of want to know, when you talk to people, the fans, do you think that people are more than willing to just, quote-unquote, pack the bags of Dylan Gabriel the way it was said in the afternoon? Do you think the fans are really not interested in Dylan Gabriel? The fans, not the organization. We know the organization is.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if it were up to the fans, Joe Flacco would be starting week one from everything that I hear every single place that I go in town. Everybody wants to talk to me about Joe Flacco and how excited they are about Joe Flacco being back. I don't think anybody knows Dylan Gabriel. The only thing they know about Dylan Gabriel are the few clips that we're putting out there, or the Browns are putting out there on X. So nobody really knows who this young man is to any great degree. He doesn't come in here with a big name. He doesn't come in here with a lot of flash and razzle-dazzle. So they're going to have to get to know him a little bit if this is going to kind of tickle their fancy a little bit as far as him starting or playing games for the Cleveland Browns this year. Shador, of course, he comes with his own set of circumstances, the big name, all the flash and all the hype and all that kind of stuff. So fans know who he is, or at least a lot of fans seem to know who he is. So Dylan's kind of flying under the radar, and even Kenny Pickett to a certain extent is flying under the radar. I think from a fan standpoint, it's more about Joe and Shador.
Could you, Mary Kay, and do this as responsibly as you could possibly do, could you power rank the quarterbacks in terms of arm strength? Who's number one?
Well, Joe's number one. Joe is number one. And then I think it's sort of debatable about the other three. I think that Dylan and Shador have really good arm strength. I think Kenny's got good arm strength. Those three, I don't think there's a huge differentiation amongst those three. Joe is a cut above because we know what Joe can do. But the others have good above average arm strength. Dylan more so than people give him credit for because of his size. Shador has nice arm strength, but not tremendous arm strength. And I think you can probably say the same thing about Kenny. I mean, they can all get the ball wherever it needs to go. But, you know, they're not going to break your knuckles necessarily.
How did Deontay Johnson fly up the depth chart here over the last week?
Well, once again, you know, we're making up things with the imaginary depth chart. Here's the thing with the receiving core right now, and I'm, you know, kind of kidding about that, but the receiving core is not in a wonderful place right now because Cedric Tillman and Michael Woods are injured. So you could say the same thing about Jamari Thrash. You could say the same thing about Keyshawn Johnson, Cade McDonald, Gage Larvadane. These guys have flown up the depth chart, too, because they need bodies. And here's the other thing. They're two-spotting, remember, and that's running the simultaneous passing drills. So you've got guys that are working with the first team or the second team that normally wouldn't be. So there's nothing that should be read into that about Deontay Johnson. But the good thing is that he's out there, he's there, he's working. We got to talk to him yesterday. And if he can kind of keep his head together, then they could be onto something with him.
You know, looking at the wide receiver room right now, Mary Kay, you wouldn't do this. You're a respected journalist. But Lyman and I are just wild men. Do you think there's a possibility we could make up a name at the back end of the wide receiver room and that we could say, hey, he's looked so – Billy Farfignugan has looked very good in training camp so far, and do you think we could get people to believe that?
Yes, I do think that you could do that.
Okay, let me take the question further. Can I ask Daryl Ryder about Billy Farfignugan, and he'll just freak out and go, Billy, you know, he's gone through the right drills.
He played at Northern Illinois, didn't he?
He has impressed this group where he knows all the routes. He knows how to run the proper route. He knows how to read a secondary.
The kid from Earnton.
Yes, he's really surprised them. Do you think I can get Daryl to go along with it?
No, not Daryl. You cannot do that with Daryl because he knows this roster, and he's out there watching every single rep every single day. So not Daryl, but you could probably catch a few people.
Well, doesn't mean I ain't going to try, Mary Kay. Lima, go right on ahead.
Mary Kay, it was nice to see Myles Garrett back this week, especially when we seem to be having issues in other AFC North organizations in Cincinnati and in Baltimore. The videos I saw, because I didn't get a great look when I was just standing there and they were practicing, you know, four fields over. But the video I've seen with Myles Garrett, I mean, the guy looks like...
You could have gotten closer, but I'm not going to tell everybody who you were sitting there chewing the fat with on the other side of the field. I got a lot closer than you did.
So the just the guy looks like, you know, he's been doing this all offseason. He looks ready to go, ready to roll, but he talked a lot about leadership. Are you buying it coming from Myles Garrett?
Well, when we were at the NFL owners meetings, that's when Jimmy Haslam called for more leadership from Myles. And I asked him how he felt about that from Jimmy. And he said, you know, he put that on me and I'm accepting the challenge. And so I am buying it. I actually think that, you know, when I look at the big picture of it all, I was at least mildly surprised that he didn't come to voluntary OTAs after accepting that challenge from Jimmy Haslam. But that's just not Myles. He's not going to do that. He was in Japan. He does his own thing. That's what those guys are permitted to do. The Browns don't hold it against them. They're not holding it against Myles. But aside from that, I do think that he's going to take up that mantle, and I think he will do everything that they need him to do from a leadership standpoint. And again, as Jim Schwartz said, with great power comes great responsibility. So he also challenged him to have his best season ever. And I can see that Myles does have a bit of a new resolve.
Our buddy Nathan Zagura was with us last Friday. He said that they intend to have a tougher training camp in 2025. I ask you, it's been 6 years. We're going into year six with Kevin Stefanski. Is it too late for him to turn it up on the training camp intensity?
No, not at all. It's not too late, and you can see it. And in addition to the fact that they have turned up the tempo and they've increased the amount of reps and they're running dual passing skills and stuff like that, they've also completely overhauled their health and performance staff. So this goes hand in hand. Not only do they plan to be tougher, more calloused mentally and physically, but they've also overhauled their training staff, their nutrition, all of that kind of stuff. So they said after the season they were going to look at everything. They have looked at everything. I think in the past they were very, very analytics driven in the health and wellness piece. I think more so now they're just maybe going a little bit more old school. I know Bubba mentioned last year they needed to be tougher and play harder with more effort and intensity. I know that Mike Vrabel instilled that in them. I wrote about this the other day, a whole story about the intensity piece. And I do think that I don't think it's too late by any stretch.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us. I want to play a snippet of audio here for you and just either confirm or disconfirm a suspicion I have. Here is Nick Chubb yesterday talking about him going to the Houston Texans. Lima, Owen, roll that tape.
You know, I was questioning why they wanted me. And then I came here and I saw a bunch of guys who like to work and not talk. And I realized that I'm a perfect fit. So I realized why they wanted me here. And I'm excited about it.
All right. Mary Kay, that's not telling, right? Like, he's just talking about his new teammates, right? He's not talking about his old teammates at all there. Just making sure.
You know what? Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he is talking only about his new teammates there, because Nick doesn't seem to me to be the kind of guy that's going to take a shot at his old team. And he loved the Cleveland Browns and he loved his teammates here. So I'm not going to put that on him. Of course, I'm sure he's hurt that he's not here. But I don't think that he was taking a shot there.
Wanted to make sure Mary Kay, and that's why I asked the vaunted journalist and the Bill Nunn Award winner, Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, we thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. See, I dabble in the journalism thing, but I'm not full in on it. She is full in on it, and that's why I ask them questions. You think I could fool Daryl, by the way?
No.
You think I could fool somebody else?
Yes, 100% you could.
We got Layson Joy joining us at 9:01 this morning. I talked to him earlier this week. Lima was just chewing his ear off earlier this week. That's why he didn't get a good look at any of the quarterbacks.
I was doing some talking.
And then he didn't stay around to interview Quinshon Judkins. Boy,
I can tell you what happened.
What?
I can tell you what happened.
And tell me what happened.
Doesn't typically go down. And you know what? I apologize to the Browns and to the people who wanted firsthand Browns reporting. But there were cavalier rumors swirling. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there. Now, Zach Jackson wanted nothing to do. Like, I was about to say,
what were you doing sitting with Zach
We were distracting Zach. He wasn't happy. Then Jason and I had a big conversation about some of the rumors floating surrounding the Cavs. Then I get a phone call from an NBA insider, so I had to walk away. And then I come back and I go, Zach, who just threw that football? And Zach just looked at me like, really? I gotta hold your hand. I gotta make sure.
I know who the NBA insider is. Yeah. I should dox him.
Do it.
With who called you? No.
So the problem was,
I kind of wanted to grab the phone from you and go, talk to me. You won't talk to me. Why won't you talk to me?
I am disappointed that you didn't stay around for that Quinshon Judkins interview.
Well,
you could have been in on it. You could have got all the laughs in.
I had a point of no return. I had a drop dead date. I had to leave and go pick up the kids from the in-laws. And I cannot be late.
We could have had Izzy in on it.
So anyway, this is one of the rare times.
I feel like a Knox Harrington in Big Lebowski laughing at that. Go ahead.
This is one of the rare times where the Cavs overshadowed something that was going on with the Browns that I was at. I had to field these phone calls. I simply had to. There's no way around it.
I must know what you were talking about then.
By the way, somebody said if you really want to get some of these people, you can't mix up names because they're just going to think you got the names mixed up. And I said, that's a great point. Yeah. So Christian in Akron says, Javonte Quick sounds like a legit name.
What school did he go to? And remember, they were picking up local guys to round
Southeast
out.
Southeast Alabama. Exactly. So you could say a wide receiver, and there will be play. Oh. Southeast Alabama is perfect. Oh, my God.
Well, he transferred.
Right now.
He was at Ohio State for a year.
You can't say Ohio State. No.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of guys that left Ohio State that you've never heard
of. He was at Mississippi State for a year. Then he transferred to Southeast Alabama. That's what Javonte Quick did. That's the backstory.
He's from Bessemer, Alabama. You're thinking of Dylan Pendleton. You know what you were thinking of.
That's another one.
That was a great football family, too, by the way. His brother had a 3-year run on the playoff Buffalo Bills. That was pretty good.
I want to play this audio from earlier yesterday. I'm a little bit taken aback by this statement that not only did one of my coworkers say, but you agreed with.
It boils down to something interesting. Like, how willing are you to move one of the two rookies instead of one of the two veterans?
I would be willing to move Dylan Gabriel. I really would. And I would be willing to move Kenny Pickett, too.
I would bet 99% of our fan base can say, I'll pack Dylan Gabriel's bags for him.
Yeah.
You know, I'll make that move 11 times out of 10. If you can get a charcuterie board and a pick for Dylan Gabriel, I'll go ahead and take that. And I think a lot of people would be willing to say that about Kenny Pickett, excuse me. I don't think anybody in our audience right now is willing to say that about Shador Sanders.
I would agree with that.
I'm not going to find anybody that's going to say that about your door.
No one's trading away Dylan Gabriel right now. No one's packing Dylan Gabriel's bags right now. For the love of God. Now, he makes his home here. You know people in Cleveland. We've been looking for a quarterback since Bernie Kosar. You think anybody's anybody in the fan base? I'm not talking. The easy thing to say is nobody in Berea is doing it. That's easy, but that's not the thing I'm saying. Nobody in the fan base is packing Dylan Gabriel's bags right now, unless he cuts somebody off in traffic. Unless he took too long getting lottery tickets in front of somebody at a gas station, nobody's packing Dylan Gabriel's bags for him. That's insane. We are in mandatory mini camp in June. Nobody's packing Dylan Gabriel's bags to thin out the herd.
But you know what's happening?
They're going to be open minded and see whether or not he's got some. They probably think he does.
The organization.
And he'll prove it to them, or he might not.
The fans are not being open minded about this.
No, I think I'm talking about the fans. I think the fans have an open mind.
I think the fans want to clear out the room and make this as easy as possible. For the coaches to be able to evaluate and having to do that with four guys as compared to most situations, it's two guys. Most situations, when a rookie comes in and a veteran is there, it's just two guys. They're getting the reps, but really the veteran doesn't need to get all that many reps. Then you can get straight to developing.
Why do I need to make it easier for him?
Kenny, it feels like there's too many guys in the way for real evaluation, for real development to kick off as early as possible.
Why do I need to make the evaluation easier for them when they have four guys where they had one guy before and they couldn't get that guy right? Two times over they couldn't get that guy right if we're really breaking it down and being nasty about it. Why do I need to take away any of the guys to make it such an easier evaluation?
Yeah, but that's also part of it.
Then they brought in Ken Dorsey to try to save him.
You have three guys in this situation that are all young, one of which does have starts under his belt, but still is clearly in need of development. If anybody saw Pickett the last time they saw him, he is clearly in need of development. And then you have two rookies.
Why do I need to develop Kenny Pickett?
They were not.
I'd rather develop the rookies.
They were not Jaden Daniels. They were not this year Cam Ward, number one overall pick.
We know that. Their names are Shador Sanders and Dylan Gabriel.
Third and fifth round picks. And third and fifth round picks, I think the thought process is they're going to absolutely need more development. Because that's why they slipped all the way to the third and fifth round.
So why would you trade them away?
With so many NFL teams. Well, it's just to free up the room because most fans don't believe you have two good quarterbacks here.
Fans know we actually have one good quarterback here.
They don't.
So you might as well give them all a crack at it, considering I think a lot of people think we're going to take the quarterback next year.
Having them all in that room at the same time, you are just getting in the way of being able to truly find out which is the better one.
It's June 12th.
How
is he getting in the way? How is he getting in the way?
Do you think Washington should have brought in eight quarterbacks last year to get in the room at the same time to see who's the best guy and who should win the competition?
You wouldn't
make sure it's just two guys, but that's not what Washington did. Mm. They weren't sitting there saying it's a quarterback competition with four guys all equally weighted.
Wizard move
which is asinine. We said that the day after. This is not the way that you would want to bring in usher in new rookies. I know. Did anybody hear anything I said? Ken talked over everything
I talked under
over the last 4 minutes.
I talked under you.
Jeez. Couldn't get a thought out.
Don't get mad at me because what you said was stupid.
You're talking over me, Ken.
I'm not talking over you. I'm talking under you. I was hoping to save you from your own stupidity because this fan base is not running anybody out of town on June 12th. Now, after the first preseason game, go ahead and say it all over again if you want to. The floor is yours. Hell, we did it this time yesterday. Might as well do it again. You can take a call?
Go ahead. Talk over them, too.
Mike and Stowe, you're first up on the fan.
No, you sound so stupid.
Oh, Lima, don't do that. I would never talk over you, Lima. Come on.
Go ahead, Mike.
So, I'm going to go with Ken on this one because I listened to Peterlin last night, and when Nick's not around, Peterlin is out of his mind. He's so in love with Shador Sanders. It's like so obvious. It's like, Dylan, I heard you hit the ground with one of his throws last night, so let's get him out of here. You know, this is crazy. It's clearly favoritism on his part. So look, he doesn't even hide it well. It's so bad. But no, I want to see them all. It's a tank season. This is the best looking tank ever. We're going to show the NFL how a real tank is done. It's a tryout tank. All these guys are going to get a shot. They're all going to get a chance to show what they can do. That's what this is all about. Our offensive line still stinks. So I love the banter and all the talk about all this. But look, they're all going to get a chance to play, the young guys for sure. I don't really care about the two veterans. It's not about that. We're working towards the future, guys. But, yeah, Peterlin is out of his mind.
Yeah, I think we're closer to bringing in a fifth quarterback than we are to getting rid of one of the four. I ain't going to lie to you, Mike.
It's too early. You can't do it yet. You've got to see what they can do. And, by the way, it just doesn't make any sense. We're not going anywhere this year. Why do we got to be in a hurry for anything? That's all I got to say.
Thank you for the call,
you
Mike.
Think the offensive line stinks? I don't think it stinks.
Jay Correo.
Very nice of Mike bestowing best looking tank in NFL history.
Jay Correo, too, real quick. You don't think fans have a bad perception of Gabriel? You clearly don't pay attention to Twitter, man. Smart move, by the way, he says. They had a bad perception about this guy on draft night. Yeah, because I think we were all surprised that they took him 94th overall. But they took him. I think it's just a bad perception of the front office picking talent. But I think fans are open-minded. Who is, other than Joe Flacco just being more comfortable with him, I think if you went out and asked 10 people, hey, do you want to trade Dylan Gabriel right now for nothing for a charcuterie board? Would you trade Dylan Gabriel right now for a seventh-round pick? Be fair to him. They go, it's June. Why do you want to trade Dylan Gabriel? I think 10 out of 10 Browns people, Browns fans, at a Walmart, Target, Costco, Giant Eagle, wherever the hell you might be, getting your oil changed, all of them would go, it's June. Why do you want to trade any of them? Did they do something wrong? Did Dylan Gabriel get in trouble? Why would you want to trade him now?
I think that's crazy. Ken, it's just that they think he's wasting their time.
I don't think he's. How can any of these guys waste their time? Deshaun Watson was a waste of time. Doing everything they did was a waste of time. Hell, it wasted all the players' time, the players that we actually know and love. That was a waste of time. I'm as open-minded as anybody when it comes to these four guys. We're talking about waste of time. Good God, look over the last 3 years.